No one.
What's up, Gator Nation? Welcome to the latest Gators Online show. Zach Albaverde and Nick Del Torre here, and we've got Florida's first road trip of the season to preview. Another SEC game for the Gators. They travel to Starkville, Mississippi for a matchup with the Mississippi State Bulldogs, who are coming off a pretty bad home loss to Toledo. So an opportunity for the Gators to get a win in SEC play, potentially kill some of the noise, Nick, but it's been very loud this week in Gainesville, Florida. A lot of storylines that we'll cover from this week. But nonetheless, we're ready for another game. Week four of the 2024 season, Nick. We're a third of the way through.
It feels like the season's been going on for longer than 19 days. Zach, feels like we've been playing this season for months.
It does. It does feel that way.
But yeah, game four, it's a leap year. So you get two bye weeks. Florida will get their first bye week after this trip to Starkville. I, unfortunately, will not be making it. I'm trying to think. I think this will be my fifth game that I've not been in attendance for. I went to all the 2020 games. I missed the Vegas Bowl, which, as degenerate of a gambler as I am, that was a tough one for me to miss. But yeah,
you were booked for it. You got sick.
I got sick the day before the Vegas Bowl, or a couple of days before. And then there was one other trip that I didn't make where I got like violently sick hours before the flight. But yeah, it feels weird not going. Also, I went to Starkville in 2018. No disrespect to Starkville, Scott Strickland's alma mater. I've been. I don't need to see it again.
I've never been, so I will see the cowbells.
Check it off.
Yep. Got to check it off, see what the cowbells are like. And it'll be a unique game, I guess, for Mississippi State, because they'll be going all white at home, forcing the Gators to bring out their blues. And every team that Florida has played this year so far, Nick, has worn all white. So
this is a successful jersey combination against the Gators. If you believe that what the players wear and what the team wears, then you might want to bet against Florida this week in the whites.
Yeah, there's only one way to combat that, I guess, and that's bring out the blue tops and orange bottoms like they did against Samford, which you don't see very often.
Just rock them every week.
They did look clean, I will say, under the lights. Look,
last time we had seen them, Florida was getting blown out by Teddy Two Gloves. In the Louisville Cardinals.
Well, they wore them against like North Texas or something like that in like 2016 or 17. But yes, they don't bring them out often. They also wore them in 1999 at home against Florida State, and that game did not go well. And that was the first time that they had ever worn them in my life, that I'd ever seen Florida wearing blue tops and orange bottoms. That was the game. Yes, that was the game where they had the shirts outside of the stadium. All the Florida fans wore of the Heisman pose or the Heisman trophy and a pair of cuffs on it and a Dillard's bag, poking fun at Peter Warrick. That was classic. But we got the Mullen Bowl this week, Nick.
Yeah, I saw Dan tweeting about it. He's interested in this game. Dan's made a bunch of money from both of those schools. Bunch of money from Celsius, too. Shout out to Dan. Yeah, what a guy. What a tweet. Really tuned into. They should have put him on the call.
They should have. That would have been good TV. Somebody missed the mark there. We'll get all into this matchup, what we're looking forward to on Saturday, some keys to the game, and everything like that for a 12 p.m. kick, but 11 a.m. local time in Starkville, Mississippi. So stay tuned for that. But we do have to start this show with some news this week. There was a lot of different things that came out of the press conferences, but I think the most notable item actually came from the injury report, and that was Eugene Wilson being ruled out for the second straight week against Mississippi State. And on Thursday, we learned why. We first reported at Gators Online that Wilson had minor knee surgery this week. And that is what has sidelined him. If you remember last week, he was listed as questionable, practice on Thursday, went through pregame warmups, then was ruled out as a game time decision. And then this week, not even a chance, obviously, that he's going to play against the Bulldogs after that surgery. So it's not season ending, Nick, but nonetheless, the Gators are now without their best offensive player for the second straight week in SEC play, and that is not what they need.
No, certainly not. In offense, and listen, the offense hasn't been the issue, but the offense also hasn't been inspiring, to be kind. The offense hasn't been inspiring, but Florida's defense has just been putrid. Billy Napier called it disgusting. It's probably the one thing Billy Napier has said since August 31st, where fans were like, yeah, you know what? I agree, coach.
Well, also, I think they agreed with him when he said that he would have booed as well.
Okay, so. Two things. And I wrote it after – I think the defense looking the way it has is where I've missed – where I'm my preseason projections, predictions have missed the mark the most. I thought the defense would take a step up. Obviously, I think you lose Asa Turner early second half against Miami, or maybe third quarter against Miami. That hurts.
And then also Joey Slackman not being the number two defensive lineman in the portal that he was rated to be. And he's all, we don't have it on the screen, but he's also out after minor surgery this week. So two guys that were supposed to be impact players on your defense haven't really done that. To your point, Nick, Pup Howard has.
Yeah, but it's more than just those couple players. And I wrote it after the game. I'm like, shame on me, shame on us. It's the same defense. It's the exact same defense, same calls, the same plays. You had
same Patrick scheme.
Tony. You had Patrick Tony. You had Austin Armstrong, both who learned this defense under Ron Roberts, and it didn't work in 22. It didn't work in 23. Ah, let's just go straight from the source. Maybe the water was getting contaminated as it trickled down the ground, and let's just go straight to the tap. And listen, I know they don't let kids drink out of water hoses anymore, Zach. That water used to be good when you and I were young. You run outside, you're playing football, you don't need to go inside, you're just drinking out of the hose.
That's right.
The groundwater's bad. The hose has gone bad.
Been contaminated.
Shame on us for thinking and hyping up Ron Roberts and these portal picks, because it's the same stuff we've seen for 2-3 years. The offense is fine. It's not great. It's upper lower class in the SEC in that 13-14 range, 9 in a couple categories. Honestly, the truest thing Billy Napier said, I think, this week was special teams have been the strength of our program. Shout out to Jeremy Crawshaw. Shout out to the mat. I told you it was not embarrassing to have a mat. It's more embarrassing to send 9 guys out on the field consistently for special teams. Matt for MVP, Joe Houston for MVP, Jeremy Crawshaw for MVP.
And also Shamire DK for MVP on special teams. He's done a great job, and we learned that we – have been pronouncing his name wrong. So we apologize. I have been going Shamir, and he corrected us on Wednesday night. And Shimmer, I still can't get it right, Nick.
Yeah, well, you still haven't gotten Billy Napier's name, right, but I don't know that you'll need to figure it out long
Chim.
Term.
We'll just go Chim.
Just go Chim.
Shamire is how you say it. I would not have guessed that. So our apologies for months of mispronunciations. At least it wasn't years of mispronunciations like it was with Kingsley Egwukan.
Egwukan. Kingsley Egwukan. literally, we asked Princely Umamielen's coach, hey, how do you say his last name? He goes, Princely. I'm trying.
Yeah, not even going to go there. So, yeah, a lot of injuries. We'll get into the full injury report here in a moment. But We already saw how it impacted the Gators against Texas A&M. Nick, how do you think that this continues to impact Florida with Wilson out of the lineup? Who needs to step up? You know, you've had, obviously, Khalil Jackson. Also, you've got two starting receivers that are out. And Marcus Burke has started the last two games since Jackson's injury. And then Elijah Badger started for the first time last week with Florida with Wilson out. So you're looking at DK, Burke, and Badger as your top three right now. But I think some of those young guys as well will have a chance to maybe fill the void with Wilson not playing once again.
Yeah, I think the initial one that I think of is Elijah Badger. He had a really good game last week. His first touchdown in orange and blue, Chim.
He scored twice, actually. One of them got called back.
Chim gets his first touchdown in orange and blue as well. Tank. I mean, apparently Taylor Spirito is the guy that fills in for Eugene Wilson. No disrespect to Taylor Spirito. Older player, former walk-on, grinder, hard worker. But I would like to see Tank Hawkins probably fill that role.
Andy Jean is back this week.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
He's not on the injury report.
He was a game time decision last week and was suited up and we didn't see him. But yeah, Aiden Mizell, Tank Hawkins. If Andy Jean makes the trip, Andy Jean.
TJ Abrams, maybe.
I think TJ Abrams is a redshirt candidate.
If it's not these injuries that receiver keeps piling up.
Apparently, we were all unfamiliar with Dirty 30's game.
That's right.
And Dirty 30's ahead of
four. He is. He's ahead of Tank. He's ahead of TJ. He's ahead of Andy. And based on the snap count, it looks like he's even ahead of Aiden Mizell, which is surprising. But maybe it comes down to trust, assignments, running the right routes. Who knows what the reasoning is for that rotation, but that is something to monitor moving forward. At the end of the day, though, I don't care who they go to replace Eugene Wilson, it's not going to measure up to number three. And that's a big loss for Florida. And, you know, they are favored in this game in Starkville, Nick. But this offense is just not the same without him in the lineup. And Mississippi State's chances of getting this win now go up significantly, in my opinion, with Eugene Wilson not in the lineup. And we'll see what Florida does. You know, I think with their top of their receiver.
That's a wild statement. This is a team that just got blown out by Toledo at home, 41-17. Like, I don't disagree with you that, yeah, having Eugene Wilson hurts Florida's chances to win football games, but that's crazy.
It improves Mississippi State's chance to win the game for sure. Because, yeah. I mean, you just don't have a guy now that can go on an 85-yard jet sweep or that can get you some extra yard just because of how quick and his first step. I mean, that's a big piece to the puzzle on offense that is now cast off to the side. And
they've been playing with a soaking wet puzzle for 2 years anyway. So it's been hard to put the pieces together as is. And now you're taking away wet cardboard from the puzzle that is Florida's offense.
Yeah, and it's, again, Florida's going to have to figure out what they do at receiver. But it's just not Eugene Wilson that they'll be missing on Saturday. Nick, the Gators are down a total of six starters on offense and defense. Not where you want to be heading into your first SEC road game. You know, we can break down some of these players. We've obviously already talked about the two receivers, but I think on the defensive side, Slackman certainly stands out. But I think having Aaron Gates be ruled out for this game, I think is a big deal because he has been one of the bright spots on defense, in my opinion. And even when Sharif Denson was gone, went from questionable to being able to play against Texas A&M, Aaron Gates still got the start over him and looked like he kind of had the edge. So now you go back to Denson and you still don't have Jakeem Jackson back, which again, he didn't look great in the first two games, but he still started both of those first two games. So that's a starter that you're missing. You got Aaron Gates down. You still don't have Asa Turner. You have DJ Douglas available, but like, do you make a change there given the way that he played against Texas A&M? Do they go Bridges? Thornton's back in the lineup at safety. I asked Billy before knowing that Gates was out if they would have thought of potentially playing Gates at safety because of how well he's played, and at least you can go to Denson at star and not have too much of a drop-off, if any. But obviously they don't have that option with Gates out of the lineup. But, Nick, outside of Eugene Wilson, which guy is really going to hurt their chances as well this Saturday, not being able to play?
I think Aaron Gates, he's one that I pointed to. Obviously, Sharif Denson was getting the start over him, but I thought Aaron Gates was really impressive, especially against Samford, because Samford was really trying to just throw the ball into the flats, get the ball out quickly, and I thought the way he played downhill, fought to get to the ball carrier, was really impressive. He's probably the guy that I look to outside of Eugene Wilson. I think those two are probably the top two. Slackman, it factors in because, as I said, and I think as we're seeing, there isn't a – I said it before the year. There's not a all-SEC player on Florida's defensive line. And I thought they could play better or above their singular personal levels because they only had to play a certain number of snaps. And now you've lost Jamari Lyons, who was your backup nose tackle. Joey Slackman's a guy who's had to kind of help and fit in there.
And then Micah Barreau is out on Saturday.
You're taking out – you know, you used to be 3-4 deep at some of these positions, and now it's Dez and
Cam Jackson.
Dez and Cam Jackson, and it's an offense that is similar to Tennessee that wants to move the ball quickly, get the ball out of her hands as soon as the umpire. I think the umpire is the one that sets the ball. As soon as the umpire sets the ball down, the ref sets the ball down, we want to have our play called and be ready to go again. You're going to get these defensive linemen trapped. This is a team who already can't get off the field. You're going to get these defensive linemen trapped on the field for 6-7 plays at a time. And then when they come out, you're putting another guy in who might already be tired because you don't have the depth to rotate those guys. So I think that's going to be – I think I'm talking myself into a pick here. Your defensive line is missing that. That depth, which I thought was their biggest strength coming into the year.
Yeah, it's unfortunate to see some of these pieces that I think that they counted on to make a difference not be able to show up in the early part of this season. So we'll see what type of impact it has on Saturday as we continue to break down Florida's first SEC road trip to Starkville. I want to give a shout out to our new sponsor, and that is Roback. And the best way and only way to describe Roback is best fit and best feel. For those who aren't familiar with Roback, they are completely changing the game with their incredibly comfortable activewear. They just released their new licensed game day collection, and it is awesome. Novel polo designs, clean hoodie, Q-zip designs from your favorite schools, including, of course, the Florida Gators. Nothing else like this is on the market. And we had a chance to check out some of the selection from their Florida brand, and it's very impressive. Awesome shirts, awesome detail, and you can get your hands on it with the promo code Gators20. Go to roback.com, type in that code Gators20, and get 20% off for all new customers. That's ROBACK.com. 20% off with the code Gators20, and that's performance polos, shorts, and much more. Make sure that you guys go and check that out at roback.com. And Nick, you know, I think that going back to the injury front, you know, one of the disappointing things for Florida as well is just kind of what I think has happened, you know, at the safety spot. That was a position where looking into the 2024 season, coming out of training camp, coming out of the offseason, we thought that that might actually be one of Florida's strengths on defense, if not their strength on defense. And obviously, Asa Turner, one of the top-rated safeties in the portal, being out has not been good. But also, you know, the disappointing play from DJ Douglas, which I mentioned, it was unfortunate what happened to Bridges in the Texas A&M game. You lose him in the first half. He probably could have helped you in that second half against the Aggies. And, you know, even Bryce Thornton has been banged up at times. So just not a lot to be excited about and about how that's developing with those injuries. And then Gregory Smith, you know, he's one guy that we heard some hype about during camp. He got some run with the ones on defense, but he hasn't really been able to make an impact. And then with Aaron Gates out at Stars, don't really know exactly who the backup is there. You know, I think it's Josiah Davis, the true freshman, but they also had somebody else listed as a backup at one point. So, Nick, there's really problems, you know, across the board on defense. I think the one spot that's been at least some consistency is the F position, where they've had a pretty steady rotation. I don't necessarily know that the production is what they want. I think Tyreek Sapp has played well. But there's still a heavy rotation there, even though the production is not really where they want it yet.
Yeah, and I still think Jordan Castell is a good player. I think he's long and rangy and can run. Florida's linebackers, I think, have played well in both of the losses. Didn't play well in the game Florida beat Samford, but that was more of a what Samford was doing offensively. It wasn't going to be a good game for linebackers specifically. Everything to me, though, starts up front, and Florida's offensive and defensive lines just aren't cutting it. Defensively, like I said, you're now losing players to injury and losing the strength, which was your depth. It's not that Florida's secondary is All-Americans and they're having bad years, but it is correlated to how long the quarterback has to throw. Yep. And it's harder to cover guys for longer. It's just, to me, it feels like we've just been saying the same things now, not just this year, but for 3 years about the defense. And it starts up front. The only thing that we're really changing and saying differently is that, hey, the linebackers are playing well. Like, that's a solid room.
Yeah. And you got depth at edge, and that's about it, you know. Or should I say F? You know, I you've had TJ Searcy and George Gums both playing that jack spot, and they've had some bright, you know, some flashes, but I don't think either of them are playing to the level that Princely Umanmielen was playing at.
We tried to tell people, they didn't want to hear it, because, you know, there would be a singular Twitter clip of Princely loafing from a game, one of the 58 snaps he'd play. And we try to tell people, like, this is a guy that led you in tackles and sacks two straight years. It's going to be a loss.
The team named him their defensive MVP after last season. The team.
No, that's not what I saw on Twitter.
So that's obviously
You'll see him again in November. You'll see him again up close and personal in November.
But that's obviously something that's been noticeable is – not being able to fill that void. I think that's been left. Another storyline that we've, I think, been monitoring on defense, Nick, you and I have kind of known about this, but didn't really know exactly. We just had been heard. We've heard things and kind of saw the writing on the wall. But we did get some clarity this week from Napier, who revealed that Ron Roberts, the co-DC and head coach of the defense and linebackers coach, is in fact calling the plays. Now, that's not how it was in the spring. Austin Armstrong, we were told, would be the coordinator based on our exposure at practice in the spring camp. It looked like he was still running the defense and running the show, but that has not been the case this fall, and you know, I don't know, at one point the keys were handed over to Ron, but he is now driving the bus here. And you know, Billy had said earlier in the season that when he was asked about offensive play calling, that he thought that it was overrated to be giving credit or say who is calling plays. I would say I disagree there. I know fans do too, because you know, when things are going well, you want to know who to give credit to, and when it looks awful, you need to know who to blame. And somebody's got to call plays, and we still don't have clarity on the offensive side, although we've reported Gators Online the things that we've heard and observed. But we do know now who's calling plays on defense. And you know, Billy said, Nick, that he thought that having a third defensive play caller in 3 years isn't necessarily the issue that of why they're struggling, because it's the same system and the previous two guys were calling it. But at the end of the day, it's still a new voice leading that room and leading that unit. And there's going to be an adjustment period for him. There's going to be an adjustment period for these players. And then if you've got injuries or talent deficiencies, this is what it looks like.
Yeah. It's a new voice, new decision maker in crunch time when you're making plays on first and 10, second and 5, second and 14, third and 1. Different people will make different decisions. It doesn't matter if it's the same system. Maybe it's the system, and maybe you should have figured out that the system sucks by now.
I mean, Florida has the same system on NCAA College Football 25, but me calling plays on there and you calling plays on there is two different things.
Yeah, mine's way better.
But I mean, you can have the playbook, but how do you dial up those plays? And there's certainly been some questionable calls from Ron, and some of the coverage concepts that we've seen have been a little head scratching, not to my liking personally, but that guy knows a lot more about defense than I do. But nonetheless, the product through three games has been abysmal, Nick, and we'll see if they can turn it around. But I don't think that you can just chalk it up to injuries and new pieces and youth and talent deficiencies. Like, there is also some scheme issues, and there's some problem with the play calling. It's not just players. It's on coaching too.
Yeah. And a couple of us have asked, Billy asked Graham. I think I asked Billy and I asked Graham, what are you seeing Monday through Thursday? And what's the disconnect from Thursday to Saturday? Because whatever you saw, and I wrote about it before the year, Zach, like as the season got closer, there was this quiet confidence that these guys were exuding. Like, keep talking, we'll show you. Where is that? What were you seeing to give you any sort of confidence? Because it wasn't even a blowout against Samford until in the second half.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you, the ball was kicked off against Samford and you put your foot to the floor and just ran away with the game. You ran away with it late.
I mean, it was 14 to nothing at halftime.
One touchdown a quarter. Just spread them out. And it just comes down to them saying executing. And you're getting to the point where your execution on the field is going to get your coach executed off the field.
Okay, Brian Kelly. you said it better than him.
Yeah. and it's true. Like, listen, you don't want Ron Roberts going out there trying to make a tackle in his mid-50s. You don't want Billy Napier to be calling the plays for himself and trying to complete passes against SEC defenses. It does come down to the player at some point, but you have to also coach and put your players in positions to be successful. So this season through three games has just been a failure at every single level.
Except special teams.
They're exceptional.
Yeah.
Putting the special in special teams.
They are.
It's September 19th, and the season is cooked like your steaks, Zach. Medium well.
Well, I mean, on that note, what is the chances that you think this team, even temporarily, can get the season back on track? And what does that look like in your mind?
I wrote, like, Billy Napier will coach Florida in 2025 if Florida finishes 6-6 or 7-5. And I said 6-6, which won't make people happy, but you have two losses now, 6-6. You're going to lose spectacularly to Tennessee at Neyland. Spectacularly. You're going to lose to Texas. You're going to lose to Georgia. That means a 7-5 season. Let's do that. That means you're beating LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State, Kentucky. Like, you're going to go on a run here to get to 7-5. I just don't see that. Like, that road, the earthquake on August 31st, and then the following earthquake last week, that road is no longer drivable. I don't see a realistic path to even 6-6 or 7-5.
I mean, I will say this, though. I see a path to the second bye week. I know a lot of people think that it could happen this weekend if they lose before the first bye week. A lot of folks are pointing to the first game after the first bye week against UCF because you're five games into the season. If you make a move at that point, you're not as worried about people shutting it down and trying to take a red shirt and preserve their year of eligibility, which could happen. But I do feel like if Florida can get the next two games, which is a big if, but they are games that Florida should be able to be more competitive in and have a better chance to win than Miami and Texas A&M. Mississippi State and UCF just are not at the level of those two teams. And UCF's
going to be favored in Gainesville.
I agree with that. But if they do that, then they go from 1-2 to 3-2. You lose at Knoxville, which I don't think anything is going to stop that. And then, I mean, you are once again in must-win territory. If you lose to Kentucky at home, I think that does it. But, you know, and hey, the Wildcats almost beat Georgia, so that is a very real possibility. But I also saw the Wildcats get beat by South Carolina. So
Kentucky, Mark Stoops, ever since saying that, like, changing the climate is easier than changing the culture, and you can put your sunglasses on and wear your stupid backwards hat. Ever since then, Shane Beamer just whoops Mark Stoops. Just whoops him. Mark, if he had a time machine, would go back to the SC Media days and be like, Shane Beamer is a hell of a coach. He's fantastic.
And wears great shades.
But also, like, I have no illusion that Florida is going to stop Kentucky running the football. I have no delusion that Florida will win on the lines of scrimmage offensively or defensively against Kentucky and will be able to run the ball effectively enough to then open up passing a game. And I've seen nothing from Billy Napier on any given Saturday to think, well, he'll out-scheme Mark Stoops.
Of the next three possible wins that we just listed off, which one do you think is the most attainable? Is it this weekend? Is it at home against UCF after a bye?
It's this weekend. UCF's going to run for 300 yards against Florida. Averaging 375 a game. It's what I said over the summer. I was like, hey, that UCF game is going to be sneaky. They've got two guys last year that ran for 1,300 yards. They have the actual created player at quarterback that if Gus Malzahn got his hands on an Xbox or a PS5 controller, he would make KJ Jefferson. Even though KJ Jefferson might struggle completing a pass, he can run for 100 yards a game. They've got three guys on their roster that I will make the prediction now that UCF has two guys that rush for 100 against Florida, and they will get close to having three different guys rush for 100 yards against Florida, with KJ Jefferson being one of them. The easiest game, the most winnable game, I think, is this week, and I'm saying that about a team that's 2-9 away from home as they make their first road trip. I was staring at Billy Napier and he's like, you know, historically the first SEC road games are tough. I'm like, historically those opponents didn't just have the doors blown off by Toledo.
That's true. Plus historically, or in recent history, those road games have been hard for the Gators, no matter whether they were the first SEC trip or not. They have struggled away from the swamp, which Steve Spurrier has pointed out on about four different radio shows this week.
The other thing too is like logistically, they're staying, I was told, like in Birmingham or in Tuscaloosa. It's like a 90-minute bus ride, even with a police escort.
Yeah.
And it's an 11 a.m. game. So you're waking up at 7 a.m. to be out of the hotel by 8? To get there by 9?
That's a tough wake-up call.
You got to bring this. Zach, normally when we see this, it's in Vanderbilt. And I've also been out enjoying Broadway. And the mornings are tough. This is tough for a whole different reason.
Sure.
And it might just be like, listen, when teams play Florida, they have to stay in Ocala. But Ocala is much closer than Tuscaloosa is to Starkville.
My dogs are probably going to bark here as this gentleman walks up to the door to drop off a package. Oh, and there they go. Who let the dogs out?
It will be interesting to me. I think we're in territory, Zach, here where, and I don't know that Scott Strickland feels this way. I think it would, based on who, I think we're in a territory where the next loss, you need to make a move. And you're not going to make a move to appease the fan base, but as these losses pile up, you'll get into the territory. Fans right now are saying he's lost the locker room. You know, there were rumors flying on Twitter that, probably because of a one thumb double tap on Instagram, that Trey Wilson had quit on Billy Napier and he wasn't going to. I saw some fan tweet today that Trey Wilson texted me and said he quit on Billy. I'm like, I don't think he texted you and told you anything. And then you break the news that, hey, he's having surgery, which pretty much debunks any of the, hey, he's quitting on Billy.
I don't think anybody elects to have surgery and quit on their team.
Yeah, unless it's, you know, cosmetic surgery, but a knee surgery is not cosmetic. As you get losses, though, guys will start to check out. You know, I would, if you're a Florida player listening to this, I would advise you not to check out. If you have dreams and aspirations of playing in the NFL, throwing a tantrum about a coach you may or may not like, and putting out bad tape, which is your resume for 32 NFL teams, not the way to handle it. But you're going to get into that apathy. It's going to be interesting to see if Florida fires Billy Napier, the transfer portal window opens for 30 days. Do guys just say, we're 1-3. We're 1-3. I'm done with the season. And I can start talking to Kirby Smart right now.
And I think that's part of the reason why Florida's waiting, because they're trying to avoid that happening at least until you've got past the 4-game threshold that your players could take advantage of. Now, they might be 6-7 games into the season and they make a move, and then it's still a free-for-all and you're dealing with coaches recruiting your roster. But at the very least, at least they're not also shutting it down for the season and not playing for you. Now, that would cancel out some NIL deals. Guys would lose their NIL if they elected to make that decision, but I think some might make that sacrifice if it meant preserving their year of eligibility. But Nick, you make a good and interesting point. Like I got to say, I agree with you. I think any of the next three losses other than
any of the next two, for sure, to me. And, but like Tennessee, in my mind, it's not going to be a close loss. It's going to be embarrassing to be a Florida football fan
when they go to Tennessee. I think any of the three losses except for Tennessee would be could lead to a move, because you can't stomach losing at Mississippi State. You can't stomach losing at home to UCF. And then even if you win those next two games and lose to Tennessee, which I don't think anybody's going to hold against this Florida team, but a four straight loss to Kentucky, three under Napier at home, I think that would also do it. Even if you got some, even if you got some goodwill from winning at Mississippi State and beating UCF, which shouldn't be a lot, because those are two.
That's a problem. That's a problem, and I think why so many fans wanted it to happen, because nobody, there's not a single Florida football fan that is going to have their mind changed about Billy Napier by beating Mississippi State. There's not a single Florida football or UCF. And you're in a lose-lose situation. You win the game, and is it harder to fire him? I mean, Texas A&M gave Jimbo – Texas A&M beat the brakes off of Mississippi State, and they fired Jimbo right after the game and gave him a bunch of money. Maybe Mississippi State is the common denominator, because Billy Napier's buyout would be the second largest after Jimbo. You beat Mississippi State and you get a consolation prize of a buyout from your contract. But that's where we're at. I think that it is a real thing. I don't know that we've had a coach firing in September when the transfer portal has been in its current iteration.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So you had like Clay Helton was fired in week two or three at USC, yeah, but there was early. No transfer portal. Those guys had to stay. What does it look like now? And it's awesome covering a program where we keep having unprecedented things happen on a seemingly weekly and yearly basis. But I think it is a real thing. What I joked around on another show, Taylor Spirito got 29 reps because when you fire Billy, he's going to be one of the five receivers that's left on the roster at the end of the year who isn't in the portal and available. And you got to get him ready.
It won't quit on the team.
Yeah, so that's interesting. It's also the dynamic of you used to want to, if you're going to make a move, you used to want to do it earlier. But now the top 12 teams are in the playoff. If you're Florida, and I wrote this in the War Room today, Florida's last four football coaches were no head coaching experience, coach in waiting, Saban assistant, G5 coach, a SEC coach changed and got a coach with SEC experience, but was that a tough place to win? Outside of having Dak Prescott, didn't really win in a way that would make you excited at Florida, and a G5 coach. You can't go down that route again. Florida has historically done it.
And another former Saban assistant G5 coach.
Yes. So the boosters I've talked to, and we put this in the War Room, are pushing Lane Kiffin. A coach,
another former Saban assistant.
Another former Saban assistant. Well, listen, Saban's tentacles reach Florida, far and wide.
What Florida needed to do was former Saban assistant SEC coach. That was they had it right. They had one of them right each time. They just didn't get the combination.
But you're going to want to go for a coach who is a proven winner. Throwing like names out there like Lincoln Riley, but USC's ranked in the top five. They're going to be a playoff team. And Eli Drinkwitz is a proven winner at the SEC level. Well, Missouri's schedule is the easiest in the SEC. They could be in the playoff. Lane Kiffin's team is probably going to be in the playoff. The first playoff game is December 20th. So we're talking, I just mentioned unprecedented things. What happens if you've identified a coach that you want, but signing day is 2 weeks before that last playoff game? The portal is 2 weeks after, closes 2 weeks after. They're voting soon to even have a spring portal. You might not even have a spring portal. And if you do have a spring portal with a new coach, you can't get guys from the SEC. And we've said before, the spring portal is lower quality, higher price. It's not a good situation to be in. But so like the idea to get ahead of the coaching search, be the first one on the track, to get a leg up, you're not getting that leg up now because the coaches that you're going to want to target are probably going to be coaching well into December.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
and you're not skipping a playoff game like you would skip the Cheez-Its Bowl. Like, hey, you know what? I'm going to coach my team in the conference championship first week in December, but then I've got that 2 weeks where I don't have a life and I just recruit for my new job. No, Lane Kiffin's not. If Lane Kiffin is the guy, he's not leaving Ole Miss during a playoff run
you
to
sure
start
about
recruiting
that?
For Florida.
You sure about that?
I think old Lane would have.
You,
like,
sure, you sure that he doesn't make the playoff and get in, but then early December get announced as Florida's next coach to take over after his postseason run is done? Because it has happened before. And I know it, I know it wasn't in the playoff era, but it literally happened with Urban Meyer. You know, and again, it's different level, different time, but there are coaches that do finish out their postseason but also take a new job. This would be different levels because it literally would be one coach going from one SEC school to another and
playing for a national potential national championship.
Playing for a potential national championship while recruiting for another school and not having your current program benefit from the postseason exposure of you playing in the playoff. I'll say this, though. You said old Lane Kiffin. To hell with that. I think if there's any coach that would do something like that, it would be Lane. Like, if he wants to do it, he doesn't care. And, you know, he was going to do it for FAU when he was at Alabama, and Saban said no. So he's willing to juggle two jobs if that's what it comes to. But I think Florida would have to make him or anybody else probably have to make that announcement. Like, they would let them finish out their postseason and remain at the program that they're at, but Florida would have to publicly be able to announce that this is their next coach and have a press conference before the portal closes and before signing day. And if you can't get that, then that guy is not your guy.
So should have been the guy 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's a conversation for another day. All right, well, before we get out of here, I want to give a shout-out to MyPerfectFranchise.net. If you are ready to leave the corporate rat race for the American dream, looking for a side hustle while working your current job, wanting to diversify, build wealth, and or leave a legacy, Andy can help. He's a franchise consultant as well as a franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free. And he's here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. You can learn more and contact Andy anytime at MyPerfectFranchise.net or calling or texting him at 404-973-9901. And another ad read that we'll get to real quick as well, as we give a shout out to Prairie Dental Center. The doctor is a UF grad who's practiced in Gainesville for 3 decades and developed a deep understanding of how to diagnose and treat various dental problems, along with advanced skills to provide better care for his patients. If you're having dental concerns or just need a cleaning, Prairie Dental Center offers a wide range of options to meet your needs. Give their office a call, 352-373-3431. Tell them Gators Online sent you, and your new patient exam will be free. And with that, we look ahead to Saturday's matchup. The Gators in Mississippi State, in Starkville. First time that these two teams have met since that Mullen Bowl back in 2018. Him visiting his former team, what, less than half the season after leaving them, was a crazy setup there. Starkville has not been good to the Gators historically. The Gators just 5-7. Playing at Mississippi State. We all know, of course, those that remember at least, what that trip meant for one former Florida coach. That was the end of his tenure as Ron Zook lost at Florida in 2004 and was subsequently fired as the Gators head coach, although he did finish out the season, which was interesting. But nonetheless, there's also been some good moments that came from a loss at Mississippi State. Nick, the Gators lost there in 2000 with Spurrier and then went on a run and won the SEC title and did not lose another conference game. So we'll see what storylines come out of this matchup in Starkville. But for you, what do you see as some keys to the game for Florida, Nick?
Mississippi State does not run the ball. They do not stop the run. Dead last in the SEC in both categories. Florida has to run the football. Mississippi State is literally begging teams they play against to run the football. Florida could not last week against the guy who wanted to be their defensive coordinator, but they would not make their defensive coordinator, Jay Bateman, and the Texas A&M Aggies. Run the football. I don't even know that you can force Mississippi State because they have no intention of running the football. I don't know if you can force them to be one-dimensional. They make themselves one-dimensional, but you're going to have to tackle. Run the ball, tackle the other ball carrier.
And I think also, you know, you're right, Nick. They don't run the ball well. They've done a solid job throwing it. You know, they've got the 43rd ranked passing offense in the country, and the Gators are coming into this game down their starting nickel, down obviously their starting safety in Acer Turner, and also down Jakeem Jackson. Is Florida secondary still suspect? Is that something that the Bulldogs can exploit? That's certainly something that I'm looking for in this game. Both of these teams really haven't done a great job getting takeaways on defense. Both of them just have two and one interception. They're actually tied with each other nationally. So can you win the turnover battle on Saturday? I mean, that's key, obviously, every weekend. But on your first road trip, trying to take those cowbells and that crowd out of the game, getting a turnover on defense would be big for the Gators. And obviously taking care of it as well. But
this is the week for a fake punt, Zach. This is the week. I feel it. Feeling in my gut.
I would be all for it. You know, again, Florida's had a good year so far on special teams. It's been one of the bright spots, but still not a game-changing play yet. So that would definitely be something to see. And then another thing to watch is of course, the two quarterback system for the Gators. Last week, the first time that we've seen them alternating Lagway and Mertz. Mertz got the start, but Lagway played every other series. They pretty much played the same amount of snaps. Graham was clearly the more productive quarterback, kind of got the hot hand in the second half, and the Gators did not stick with him, stuck with their plan. How do you see that potentially playing out Saturday, Nick, especially in a road environment and another must-win game? Potentially, could we see a more of a hot hand scenario?
I think probably more Graham this week, I would guess. The noisemakers, the cowbells, Zach, again, I know I have to remind you several times, bring Advil. Shout out to Cassidy Hill, was an absolute lifesaver for me. The cowbells are loud. They only have to stop once the quarterback is like under center or ready to get a snap. So the helmet communication this week, that extra bit of help you can give DJ Lagway to be able to coach him, is not there. Simply will not be there. I wouldn't be surprised if Florida goes away from the helmet communication completely this week.
Just don't even try.
We probably dropped the ball. We probably should have asked about that, but like Justice Boone said, he hadn't even heard of about the cowbells. Like that should be, you should be playing cowbell music.
Yeah, I was surprised by that answer. Like, I mean, I guess he's on defense, so.
Yeah, but you're still going to hear it, dog. You're still going to hear it. You hear those cowbells from a mile away.
And I mean, would you not play that sound at practice? I mean, I know you can play other noise, but like I would play exactly the cowbells sound you're going to hear. Yeah. More cowbell.
Maybe the analytics didn't say to play more cowbell this week.
They were not fans of that Saturday Night Live.
Shout out to Will Ferrell. So hot hands. I don't know. I think it'll probably just be, if in my opinion, it'll probably just be more Graham than DJ. I don't know that the black and white, your drive, my drive, your drive, my drive, your drive, my drive worked out. Agreed. I thought it was funny that fans who had spent the entire week leading up to the Texas A&M game being like, Graham Mertz, thanks, but no thanks. then immediately were like, Billy has no feel. He took Graham out of the game after Graham led a touchdown drive. I'm like, you wanted Graham out of the building. You didn't even want him on the field to begin with. We got some code switching.
Yeah, listen, man, Florida fans are mad. I get it. Yeah. They're just – in anything to trigger them, they will be triggered at this point. They're tired of losing, certainly tired of going into matchups like this feeling like there's a chance to lose. There should not be. This is a game that Florida should win. Even with all the issues this season, even with all the controversy, Florida is still the better team. Even with all the injuries, Florida is still the better team. So they're favored to win this game. They should win this game. It's a third-year program versus a first-year staff. It's kind of not the same situation as last week. I mean, Mike Elko had been at Texas A&M. They've got the resources from an NIL standpoint to kind of rebuild their roster, and you've seen that he's put together a pretty good squad in year one. Mississippi State is not there, not even close. So Florida should take care of business. As Nick said, they need to run the ball. They need to stop the run. They need to not give up big plays in the passing game with a secondary that's dealing with some injuries. And then obviously they need their quarterback situation and production to work out a lot more smoothly than it did against Texas A&M. So we'll see how that plays out on Saturday. We'll be joining you guys with a rapid reaction after things play out in Starkville. Here we are, folks, week four. First SEC road trip, my first time hearing the cowbells. I'm looking forward to it. We'll see what the Florida Gators have in store on Saturday. We'll be there to cover it, as always, at Gators Online. For Nick Del Torre, I'm Zach Albaverde. See you guys Saturday.